Hi, Gail. How are you?
Good. How are you, Dave?
Good, good.
Good.
Get started in a few minutes as everybody joins.
Sure.
Hi, Al. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Gail.
Dave, can you hear me?
I can, Jenna, but I'm not getting video for you.
Okay, let me try. I'm going to leave the meeting and then try to come back.
Okay.
In February and goes.
Hi, Fred.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Al. Or no, where's Al? They're not in the picture yet. Hi,
Al
Gail.
Stepped away, yeah.
Thank you, sweetie. Somebody call my name.
There he is. Hey, Al.
Hey. I like your background there, Fred.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I have that background, but
you're on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah. Oh, I guess Lisa said my grandson just did that.
Nice.
I don't know. It makes it weird.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's not. It makes it weird.
There you go.
There we go.
Now you look like everybody else.
Some members of our consultant team are going to be joining us today and likely doing most of the talking. So I know it's 3 o'clock just now. So if we could just wait a minute. Fidella, okay, here's Paul.
Okay.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I should rename myself.
Yeah, I know you're not Paul, and I'm forgetting your name. I'm sorry.
My name's Evan McLaughlin.
Evan is right. Yeah, thank you.
Great.
Good afternoon, Jenna.
Evan, is it going to be just you today, or is anybody else going to be joining us?
No, I'm texting Paul right now. I apologize.
No worries.
Today's the voter reg deadline, so
yeah.
Everyone's scrambling. Yep.
You would please let us know, Evan, when what your ETA is to get the rest of the team on board. You're muted right now, Evan.
There's a leaf blower behind me, so I'm sparing your ears.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Sorry about that. I didn't realize the link came from you. I was looking at other emails for that Zoom link.
No worries. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
We good to get started now? This is the group. All right.
I think so. Right, Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Vice Mayor Clark and Council Member Shaw, I think we're ready to go when you are.
Al, you want to give it a go?
You're on mute, Al. Here, I'll send you a little link, maybe that, just click on that, unmute.
Got it.
Oh, there he is.
There it is.
Yeah. Well, welcome everybody. Good afternoon and welcome to a District Elections Committee meeting. And Without further ado, I'll turn it over to the city manager.
Thanks, Al. And we'll have Fidela do roll call, if you could, Fidela, please.
Sure. This is roll call for the committee members, and that's Vice Mayor Al Clark. We'll show him present, and then Council Member Shaw will show him present as well.
Okay, I see Kimmy is trying to join us, so she'll join us, Paul and Evan.
Thank you.
Great, and then we have members of the public, council members that have joined us today. Gail Marshall is here with us, and Lisa Gervitz is here. So if you want to have public comment first, comment questions, and then we can go on to the agenda matters or however you'd like to handle it. Al, your audio is not coming through.
Dave, Fidela here. Well, yeah. Well, the vice mayor is getting his audio. I would just suggest that for public comment, I'm not sure with this being their first Zoom meeting, we may make note that we do have the raise hand feature. Yeah. So if anybody wants to make a comment, to please use that so that we can try to keep the comments from overlapping.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Any raised hands, Fidela?
No raised hands.
I don't see any on my end, no.
Yeah, I don't have any either.
And Fidela, did we receive any e-comments for the general comment?
We did not receive any, and no emails as well.
Okay,
yeah. Great. Well, actually, I don't think the email was an option. It was just e-comments, yeah. So none came in.
Hey. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They were so rad.
All right, so if there's no general public comment, we can go on to the agenda matters. And then as we get into discussion, of course, Vice Mayor and Council Member Shaw, we can have public comment on each of the agenda items also. That works? Great. Okay,
yeah.
Great. All right, agenda, and this is, I guess, for items 3 and 4, which are really the substantive agenda matters here today. I want to give some context to that this is really a restart meeting. Obviously, we were derailed by the pandemic. It was this fall where we were going to kind of initiate our meeting processes, you remember, and have a initial community meeting where we started to identify the communities of interest that we talked about at our last meetings last year. And now that's been delayed. So part of what we're going to do today in kind of restarting our process and resetting our process is talk about the schedule of that process, some likely hearing dates and some scenarios that Paul and the team have developed for our discussion today. And then in light of the likelihood that we're still going to have meeting restrictions, how we can get this important work done with those restrictions in place. And we kind of have kicked around a few ideas that we can share with you and talk about in order to try to do the best we can to get public input on the district creation process. So with that introduction, I'll turn it over maybe to Paul, if that's all right, Paul, and let you, guide the team presentation from there.
Sure, thanks. First off, I want to say I'm really happy to be back. It's good to see you again. Very different than our last meeting, but you know, I'm glad we're getting started again. I didn't come by myself like last time. I want to introduce Evan to you. He's somebody who has done redistricting primarily in San Diego County, and he joined our team a few months ago. He'll be working on a lot of municipal redistricting with us. And I think he's going to be having another client in Santa Barbara County as well. So there might be a point at which you see as much of him as you see me. And then Kimmy Shigatani is just listening in. She's joined Redistricting Partners to help us at a kind of a staffing resource level. So in terms of scheduling meetings and making sure that people get onto conference calls like this and working on contracts and everything. So she's basically the one running the ship. and making sure that we can follow through on everything and help us get through this in a real positive manner. So when we last talked, there was really a desire, and I presume this still exists, to do a lot of community engagement as a part of this process in order to ensure that essentially that this whole districting process has really good buy-in from the community and it can be seen as something that is as positive as possible, you know, given the fact that it does ultimately have impacts on the city council itself and on the choices that voters have. So what I'm gonna show you and what I think you probably have been sent around is kind of a traditional schedule based on the safe harbor provisions of the California Voting Rights Act. We actually sent this over originally. It was derived from some scheduling that was being done in Napa for their districting that we're working on right now. So some of these dates are based on when they have their council meetings, but it was basically to show you like an example of how this could lay out, and then we can figure out how to adjust it for what you need. These are the required parts of the process. This does not include the other things that we talked about in our last meeting, like, you know, maybe doing something where there's an opportunity for the public to engage at a farmer's market, or doing something that is kind of more organic with, you know, community groups, organizations in the city, kind of outside the scope of the required parts of the process. So with that in mind, I'll just, this schedule is three pages that are pretty identical. The first is without dates, and I think that's probably the most instructive. And that shows that you essentially have these first two public hearings. I forgot to make a change to that second public hearing. It should say, and I've changed it on my copy, it should say before maps are drawn. Those first two hearings are really like opportunities for us to tell the community, hey, this is happening. And to have a couple back-to-back presentations, we'll probably repeat almost the exact same presentation that says, this is what redistricting is. This is the kind of data that's used. This is the process that will be followed. This is how the public can engage. This is the kind of engagement that we will find most helpful in the process in terms of identifying communities of interest and then identifying them geographically, not just saying my community of interest is renters. Maybe the idea is to say my community of interest is renters, and the ones that I feel are my community of interest are here, here, and here in the city. So taking the idea of a community and then kind of tying it to a physical geography. So we'll have those first two hearings before we draw lines. And just to prepare you, the kind of conversations that you have in these hearings are, they're really great conversations. They're some of my favorite conversations because they are more abstract. They're about where people coming up and talking about where they went to school, and that all the people that went to my same school were all kind of a community of interest, or people saying that the way that their recreation in that community, maybe they live in a part of town that's all triathletes, you know? But you know, they're in an area with a lot of seniors or an area with a lot of young people. And those parts of the conversation are really interesting to have, and they can be really informative to the process. That is in pretty stark contrast to the kind of community of interest testimony you get after the lines are drawn. And so those first two hearings would be really open, you know, almost wandering sometimes conversations by community members talking about their community of interest. We would have a possibility of doing a weekend public meeting in addition to this. So this community meeting is kind of thrown in as an opportunity, maybe even via a Zoom, to do like a workshop type of meeting, okay? And that would probably be best to be done before the, these are up there, thank you. That community meeting, generally we like to put those on a weekend or, you know, it can also be on a weeknight, but in Napa, they're doing it on a Saturday and Sunday. Those are map drawing exercises. And we could, as an example, with that meeting, do a map drawing webinar where we show everybody how to use the software if we use something like that, or we have a webinar where people can, you know, draw maps that they would email in into the city. We'll have to virtually if we can't do it in person. If we can do it in person, then it would be us coming down with maps of the city. And we do this exercise where we have like a big map of the city and dry erase markers. It's like a laminated map of the city with dry erase markers where people can participate by literally kind of drawing in their district lines and calculating up populations. Then the third and fourth hearings are these additional public hearings where, like I said, they're very different than the first two. Once you draw a line, people start to debate the line, okay? So it goes from this conversation of people saying, oh, I live in this area and these are my people, to like, oh my gosh, you drew a line down Main Street. Why did you do that? You should be drawing the line over here. And the conversation changes in some way for the better in terms of being more instructive to what the final maps are going to look like, but in sometimes for the worse, in that it really makes a lot of conversation more myopic. And it doesn't have the same kind of open feel as maybe the first two hearings. So the third and fourth hearings are these additional public input. It's chances for you to hone in on which maps maybe you're most likely to be considering, which ones you think are going to be the ones that you'll ultimately pass. And then at that fourth hearing, in a way, that fourth public hearing, it's the fifth one in the schedule, but the fourth public hearing is basically the most important hearing. Because at that hearing is when you as a council should be deciding, this is the final plan that we want to agendize for our fifth hearing. That fifth hearing is a vote only hearing. So there's no more changes to be made. There's in a lot of circumstances, they don't do like as much community input. You know, obviously you can still have public comment on that agenda, just like you could have public comment on any agenda item, but it is not seen as a quote unquote outreach hearing, because at that point, all you're gonna do is vote yes or no on a plan, a final plan. So that fourth public hearing where you're essentially choosing a final plan, sometimes you'll choose a final plan and say, we want to vote on this plan with this one change. And so whatever it's going to be, that final plan with whatever changes are necessary will go to be on posted 7 days before the final hearing. And in Napa's case, they actually put it on the consent calendar. You don't have to do that. You could have it as be a regular agenda item. But in Napa, just to reinforce the idea that this is an administrative vote rather than kind of an input hearing, they do it on a consent calendar at Napa. The last thing I want to mention is that we have the line drawing process, but the other part of it that can be as or more contentious is the district numbering process. So as we draw lines, we're going to assign seats to each of those lines. Like maybe to begin with, we'll just letter them A, B, C, D, and E. But at some point we're going to have to assign, these are the district numbers 1, 2, and 1, 3, and 5 that are going to be up in 22. And these are the district numbers 2 and 4 that are going to be up in 2024. And so on the maps, we'll have the boundaries, and we'll also have the assignments of those boundaries and the associated election cycles that those would be in. So this is, unlike the first time we met, this is really diving into the process. But hopefully we can have a conversation about, you know, how you want to structure this. Most of this that I'm outlining is required. So it's required that you have the four public hearings and the fifth hearing with a vote. It's required that you have the maps public for 7 days. The only one that's really optional is that middle one, the community meeting, because that's an additional add-on meeting that a lot of agencies like to do in order to get more public input outside of the, you know, actual city council meetings. Sometimes there's members of the public who don't feel comfortable speaking at a city council meeting, but they might feel comfortable going to a local location and you know, with their family members coming and drawing some maps. So that is the process, and I'm happy to answer any questions or work with you as you try to figure out how to make this fit into how you guys desire to move forward.
Paul, if you wouldn't mind elaborating a bit on how this schedule aligns with what we know now about release of census data.
Yeah, thanks. And I did just pass by that. This has two versions of dates. You can see on the Zoom right now, the one on the right, the page, it starts in February and ends in May. This is a really aggressive schedule that is would require that the data be released in late March, by March 31st. That is the required deadline. If you were to go look in statutes, federal statutes, they have to provide all the data to all the states by March 31st. And generally they do it in six waves. And generally California just happens to always be in the last wave. So most people prior to the pandemic would have told you, they would have bet their house on the fact that the data is gonna come out by March 31st. With the pandemic, there was a shift at the Census Department and a request by Wilbur Ross to move the census data release into the summer. That data release could be as late as the end of June, end of July, but it was a request for a 4-month delay. That request was put into a House bill. It was sent to the Senate and it has since basically died in the Senate. Right now, if you were to look on the census website as to when this data is going to be available to municipalities for the redistricting, it says TBD. So we're in uncharted waters right now. The wisest thing to do, I think, and what everybody from the State Redistricting Commission to local agencies are doing is essentially coming up with two kind of schedule scenarios right now. One is based on if somehow magically the data does come by March 31st. And that's what this first one provides. It does provide that even if the data comes March 31st, that the first maps wouldn't be until May 4th. There's one fact in California that will slow down the process a little bit, even after the data does get released. And that is that under state law, the state has to kind of manipulate the census data in order to reallocate incarcerated persons back to where they lived prior to being incarcerated. So you don't have a prison in your city, as far as I know, but if you're a jurisdiction that has a prison or other institution, then they'd be losing that population as the population is essentially plucked out of their city. And everywhere else in the state is going to be added, population is going to be added in parts of the city based on the last known home address of individuals who might have been living in your city prior to their incarceration. So it might only be a small adjustment. It might be something that's barely noticed, but it will cause a little bit of delay in when we can really, really get started fully. So what we would do is a couple early pre-hearings, then a break, and then the later hearings. If we did have, let's say, a June 30th release of the data, something around there, that's what the second schedule allows. We move those first meetings back a little bit, maybe to May, but of course we could do those meetings in February, March. It's just that there would be a longer delay between the initial meetings and the actual process. But NAPA chose to kind of compress them a little bit, move those initial meetings to May, June, then release the data gets released, let's say end of June, then first maps are drawn for July 20th. They'd be posted to the website by obviously July 13th, and they're done essentially the end of August. This is probably even still an aggressive schedule. There is really little for us to grasp in terms of like gaining a foothold on when the data is actually going to be released. So I think putting together schedules like these in order to prepare is wise, but I wouldn't want you to get too fixated on these being the actual dates. We're going to have to be really flexible, just like every other agency in California. Fred, I think you're on mute.
Council members have any questions before we go to the public?
Not for me.
All right. Al, Fred, if you'd like to take comment questions from the public, we can go to that next.
Okay, do we have any comments from the public?
Alrighty.
Okay, seeing none.
We can move then to agenda item number 4, if you like, and talk about our public outreach options and get into a little bit of more granular detail about some of the things we're brainstorming along those lines.
Okay.
As Paul indicated, we could be constrained by the pandemic ongoing. We're working right now, as your council members are aware, of hybrid meetings and starting to allow the public to testify in person at our public meetings. And I think by the end of November, we'll have that. I'm hoping we'll have that worked out. We'll be able to do that. I think for more, workshoppy kind of things where we would like, the ideal situation would be to have people in a room at tables, gathering around and drawing on maps and that sort of thing, is a little bit more challenging. We couldn't get probably constrains our ability to have, larger groups around tables. But I don't think it necessarily limits us from doing that kind of meeting altogether. And we're starting to think about the possibility of doing meetings at a park, for example, where we set up round table park and we have Paul and his staff there and we have maps out on tables, and maybe it's more facilitated in smaller groups, maybe not more than like 3 persons or something at a table, and we can get people to mark on some maps. The other thing we've thought about here, and I didn't have a chance necessarily to talk this through with Paul, so I'll ask Paul what he thinks about, if it's feasible, but the possibility of making kind of mapping packets available. We're small enough where we think if we produced 100 or so packets and told people they could come pick them up here at City Hall, they could come pick up a packet, take it home, mark it up, and resubmit it to the city. So these are the kind of ideas that we're thinking about to get public input on things. And importantly, you may remember the last time we talked about, these online digital kind of mapping tools that are available. We can use that, but, and I'll let Paul elaborate on this, but you remember Paul made the very good point that it's inherently limiting in terms of who gets to participate when you're using that kind of online tool. There's both, a socioeconomic aspect of it about people that have the wherewithal to have access to that. And then kind of a technical, right? You have to be somewhat technical savvy to deal with the software and understand how to manipulate it and submit it and all that kind of stuff. So it would create some limits there. So although now with the pandemic, we may wish, and this for the committee, may wish to revisit these things and, depending on what they cost, it might be worth it to explore that as yet another tool to use. But in our discussion before the meeting here, we were thinking it certainly probably do not want that to be our only tool for input. We probably want to still get out in the field, distribute. It's other ways of getting people to actually be able in a really straightforward, simple way, be able to make suggestions for us to use in the mapping process. Paul, anything else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, so when we met in person, and I think this has been true all pre-pandemic, I'm a computer guy, but I've always felt that the best engagement in the mapping is to strip away that high kind of learning curve that's required to get in and do GIS work in a mapping program, even if it's on the web and quote unquote user friendly. And it's better to just kind of have a in-person map drawing process. When I talked about what we did, this is very different than Carpinteria, but this is Compton, okay? And in Compton, we went to the community college district and literally, you can tell it's laminated. We had people use dry erase markers to kind of draw the district lines that they wanted and total up the amounts in there. You can see each of these has like a population. And it's a real hands-on, easy process to do. Now, we can do an online software. Like I said, it becomes a little challenging. We could do something where we did like an online training, make a workshop out of it, try to help. But for the people that might be most likely to participate, it might be a considerable barrier. If you wanted to try something different, I mean, I think all of us are very willing to and looking forward to, in this environment, trying to figure out how to do real quality engagement around redistricting. It is possible that we provide the city with 100 of these. We get people to sign up to receive these. We have a workshop where people can do these at home and we can show them how to do it. And then they can just take a picture of it on their cell phone and email it to us. We then take those pictures and we'll have a staff person sit down and literally redraw all of those in the districting software for the voter. And then for the council, provide you with a library of all the completed plans with the demographic breakdowns, the population breakdowns. So if you looked at our professionally designed maps or the map designed by Sally, who lives down at the senior center, it's going to be the same, the quality of the information you get from each of those. And this process is what we did, this hands-on process is what we did both in Davis and Napa recently. And in both Davis and Napa, the plans that they ended up passing were plans that had been passed, been created by members of the public. So there's also like a real value in terms of how people externally conceive the quality of your work when you can point to the fact that it was drawn through this more organic process and the lines were, you know, don't blame me, blame Sally down at the senior center. But that it does, it shows that the community engagement was what was ultimately the thing driving the final plans. That's really valuable.
I have to say, I'm really fond of that idea, only because when these people say these 100 different people in the community get these maps, they're not more than likely just going to sit down all by themselves and do it. They're probably going to have a few other people that are friends of theirs saying, oh, that looks kind of interesting. And they'll all get together and figure something out. And you're probably going to get a much wider range of opinions throughout the community that way.
I do like when we do these in public and it's a husband and wife, we give them one map to draw. That's that's always interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that idea.
Right, thanks, Paul. So those are any other questions from council members in the committee?
I'd like to ask a question about what we were talking about before, which is the scheduling stuff is just came up to me. And maybe this is a question for us internally, but what's our ultimate deadline for having this all done so we're ready for the next election?
Do you guys don't have primaries, do you?
No.
So with just a November election, your real deadline isn't until August of 2022. But your county is going to ask you to get it done a lot quicker than that. So, and I believe you might have, Dave might know whether or not any kind of agreements that you came to with the claimant that came forward originally under the CBRA, if there was a required date for that to be completed. I don't know if you or your council knows that, but yeah, if we get to a point where you say we need to move it back a little bit because of the census or because of, you know, maybe you feel like you'll be able to have the outdoor in-person community engagement meeting next fall, so you want to kind of move it back a little bit, that's totally fine in the situation that you're in with regards to making sure that it's done by the filing deadlines and the county process to manage all the work. Just so you know, when we draw these lines, we will likely take into consideration the existing precinct boundaries in order to reduce the amount of work that is on the shoulders of the county. But there's nothing requiring us to do that legally. And if you said, no, the community of interest lies here, and we draw a line where we feel like it needs to be, or where we have to draw a line for population equality, the county then will go redraw their precinct boundaries to match the lines that we create. And so the workload on the county to redraw precincts to match the community college district, the city, the water board, the county redistricting, all of that work, it's an immense amount of work for the counties. So they need to get the data well enough before the filing deadlines for the general election in order to do that work. So I would guess the counties are probably going to put a due date on that of probably around July 1 of 22 for it to ultimately be done.
Not before.
Yeah, they might not handle the work before because the June primary in 22 is going to be their primary focus. They finish the canvas for the June primary probably around July 3rd or something like that. That's probably the end of the canvas period for the primary. And that's when they'll shift to redrawing the precincts for the general.
So there's a, so in the off presidential year, they're going to go back to the June primary?
Yeah, governor just signed that bill a few weeks ago that from henceforward, we're going to do back forth. So presidentials will be in May and gubernatorials will be in June.
Couple of things come to mind. That's a very good question, Al. One is the legal agreement. Maybe Jenna knows if there's any deadlines along there. And then Fidela, some of the practical side, how far in front of opening up the period where candidates can take out papers do we want people to know, where those candidates can come from?
Yeah, and Dave, I can answer the from the legal side of things. So the requirement is just that we have district elections by in place by the November 2022 election cycle. So it sounds like, Paul, you're on the right track with estimating those dates.
Yeah, and I can address the nomination period. That happens middle of July to the middle of August. So we'll need to have that before that time frame in July. So probably early July. And I know what Paul was saying is that at some point, county elections will be having meetings with those of us cities that are shifting over. I think Goleta's won this year and us as well. And we'll be meeting with the county elections office so that they can kind of help us as well, or not help us, but indicate to us when they need, what their deadline is for us to get our maps to them so that they can do their work.
Yeah. I did this for Santa Barbara Community College District. So we worked with that county already before on their requirements, what they need for the GIS and paperwork and everything. So I'm familiar with Santa Barbara County's process.
All right, that's good information to help us kind of narrow down on our key dates there, key deadlines. Any other questions or discussion about that? Committee members, before we go to public. All right, would you like to, Al and Fred, open up the public comment period for agenda item number 4?
Yeah, Lisa.
Thank you. I just wanted to reiterate something that I've mentioned before, and that I'm really hoping that we don't do any gerrymandering in order to keep certain city council members on or off the council. I really want this to be a really clean process, and I think that'll happen, but I just wanted to reiterate that's a really strong feeling of mine.
That's a good thought.
That's interesting because it's a question that both as implications, as Paul said, on where lines are drawn, but also for the, in particular, maybe for the first election, the numbering system, and your 2022 is three seats, and you know, 1, 2, 3, 3, 4, 5, you know, which districts of the five are the districts that are up for election, right? Picking which districts are numbered and which ones are the three that are up for election.
Would you like for me to address this at all,
Dave? Yeah, that would be helpful, Paul, thank you.
Yeah, so we're actually in an interesting situation, and I'll defer to you, to Jenna, as your counsel on this, if she wants to get into any of the hair splitting issues of this. But right now you're doing a project under the California Voting Rights Act safe harbor provisions. There are simultaneously another set of code that has to do with the redistricting process in California for cities and counties. That's called the Fair Maps Act. And it is up to your attorneys to decide whether or not you need to follow expressly the Fair Maps Act provisions, or whether those are just essentially guideposts for us, like helping guide us a little bit. The differences between the California Voting Rights Act safe harbor provisions and the Fair Maps Act, the most operative for this discussion is that the Fair Maps Act disallows, I'm going to say this specifically how it's worded, the use of incumbency or candidate addresses as a community of interest. They also disallow the use of partisanship as a community of interest, political parties. They then further in this Fair Maps Act say that with regard to political parties, you cannot draw lines due to political parties to consider partisanship. They don't say the same strict language that you cannot draw lines with consideration of where incumbents are. So it's a very fine line difference between the way they deal with candidate, incumbent, party, and then later on readdress party to say, well, it's even to a higher standard. So where this leaves most people in the districting process is that the last two citywide redistrictings I've done, we have expressly asked to not know where the council members live. Because if we, the line drawers, don't know where the council members live, it makes it really hard for us to draw lines considering the council members as a community of interest or drawing lines for that purpose. That is what we generally use as a best practice. And we'll really defer to your counsel about the extent to which you can actually look at where incumbents live during the mapping process. Now, in the numbering process, there is going to have to be some understanding of which districts are going to come up and which council members might run in which elections. So at that point, you might, even if it's amongst yourselves, be able to discuss, well, looks like I'm in District 2, looks like I'm in District 4. But the point being that the redistricting partner's role is not going to be and can't be one of drawing lines specifically considering partisanship or incumbents or candidate addresses is in the process.
So I haven't really thought this question out that well, but you know, we have an election coming up in a couple of weeks, and presumably these people are being voted on for 4-year terms.
Yep, they will.
And so they're guaranteed a 4-year term.
Yeah, so the way it works, people don't realize this, but redistricting actually for a city council takes effect over the course of two election cycles. In the first election in 22, those, we talked about it before, is it two people that are being elected this year or three?
This year it's two.
This year, that's
two.
What I thought, okay. So in 2020, you're gonna have two council members be elected, and then they're gonna be elected to the at-large seats. Then in 22, you're gonna have three council members elected. They're gonna be elected to districts 1, 3, and 5. And then in 24, you're gonna have another two people reelected. Those people are gonna be in districts 2 and 4. So the full redistricting will take effect as almost in a staggered way. The Those first three seats will be elected under the new districting process in 22, and then the last two will be elected in the redistricting process in 24. And it's only in 24 that the full council will be comprised of people elected from a districted election system. In the intervening years between 22 and 24, you'll have like this hybrid where two are going to be elected at large and three will be elected by district.
All?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Lisa has a question.
Well, it might be the same question. I don't know. I'm just trying to drill down on the logistics of this. So to help us understand, let's say that the two that are elected are in the end in 1 and 3. I mean, it turns out that they end up we'll say that they're in districts 1 and 3, which are being voted on in 2 years. So in 4 years, both of them will be out.
So there is a situation where you're going to have, let's say we'll just pick a city. We'll just pick an area. I'll say the quote unquote downtown area. Let's say the downtown area is a district. And that district is going to come up in 22 for election. If somebody who's been elected in 20 happens to live in that downtown area, but that downtown area seat now is going to come up for election in 22, they would have two options. They could either run for that seat a year, 2 years prematurely, which might defer to Jenna, require that they resign from their current seat to run for this other one. So that's up to Jenna to answer that. But they could run for that downtown seat, or they could just fulfill their full 4 years as we talked about. And if they don't move prior to the next election, then when they are done with their term, there's just not going to be an election in their area for 2 more years. They could run again in 26. So they might have to be off the council for 2 years or something like that. So this is something that when the lines are actually drawn, the council members will look and they'll be able to see like, oh, which districts do I live in? And people running for office get to see, and you might have somebody running for office who comes up and says, hey, I want the districts numbered so that district B comes up this year and district C comes up next year, you know, it comes up in 24. So that is a process, a part of the process we get into at the very last, usually the last hearing.
And I assume as a follow-up to that, Paul, if playing out this scenario, so let's say there's a council member elected in 2020 that lives in an area that ends up being a district once the districts are formed that's up for election in 2022, and they decide to abandon their seat. Let's assume legal counsel says that that's kosher. They abandon their 2020 seat and they run for and are elected to a 2022 district seat. That leaves one of the at-large seats from 2020 open for 2 years. Does the council then in that scenario have the regular tools available for either appointing or special election or that kind of thing for the vacant seat?
The vacant at-large seat, so that your council can answer.
Yes, I believe that that is correct, Dave, that the council would have those tools available. That's my understanding. Okay. So this is something that I can look into further, kind of how all of these different pieces work together, but I believe that that's correct. So that we'd have the special election or the appointment process.
And Paul, just because I can imagine, you know, just like you don't want to know what the addresses of council members are, you know, it just all the selection. You mentioned at the beginning that the selection of the, you know, how the districts are numbered and which of those numbers ends up being, you know, up for election can become a very political, very contentious process because of the dynamics that we're talking about here. How have you seen councils going about doing that? Do they do it randomly, put numbers in a hat and draw them out and say, there's going to be 1, 2, 3 are the districts that are going to be up in 2022. And we're going to draw, you know, we're going to put the four areas in here and we're going to draw straws to determine which numbers align with which district. How do they do that to not, you know, be biased in some way?
So it is probably the most political part of the redistricting process in terms of it can be the difference between somebody having a seat to run for or not. Generally, the council members will know what the lines will mean to each of the members. They all know where they all live, so it's kind of hard to act like we don't know this. They also might know that, you know, when they leave council, that the person they want to have take their seat where that person lives or something like that. So generally what happens, I'll give Davis as an example. The council kind of honed in on a couple plans, and literally at the last meeting, there was this somewhat open discussion where one of the council members said, okay, Will, you know, if we draw this plan, you're not going to be in a seat, right? And he's like, oh, I think I'm not ready to announce that I'm not going to run, but it's likely I won't run, but I'll make that decision later or something like that. And then there are other circumstances where we've had these where the council knew, or we had a water district redistricting we did real recently, where the water board knew that this one member wasn't going to run for re-election, and that provided kind of the lubrication for one of the plans to go forward, because now it wasn't as confrontational to pass a plan where that member was nested, is what it's termed, in a seat with another member. So, you know, sometimes those kind of conversations can be enough for the board to understand, somebody to say, well, I guess I've had a great time on the council, and either I'm going to run and run against my colleague here, or I'm not going to run in the future, but we'll decide that later. And those conversations can be had. And in most cases, it ends up happening in some form or another. There has been one case where they couldn't decide, and a court actually intervened and required us to pull the numbers out of a hat. And that was pretty crazy. And one of the electeds stormed out of the meeting as soon as they realized that they got, you know, the wrong number plucked out of the hat for them. But that's something I'd like to avoid. I think in my conversations with you and my understanding of the city, I think that you have, you don't have a kind of dysfunctional, you know, leadership there that's going to necessitate something like a random draw of straws for who gets a seat.
I do have a question, and it's just occurred to me, and maybe it's something that we covered months ago when we had that meeting, but what happens in all of this with the mayor's position, or does it continue to be a rotating position?
Well, it was actually a year ago in fairness, Red, so yeah. It's good. It's fine that you don't remember, nor do I remember that part of the conversation. Is that, Jenna, something that you want to address? I mean, I think that it essentially means that, well,
we do not have an elected mayor, it's just appointed. So assuming that system continues, and this is for Jenna and Fidella, it doesn't make a difference because the council is voting to appoint who's mayor.
Right, that's correct. So I think that unless we were to change that approach.
Okay, just curious.
Yeah, each new council appoints the mayor.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. Al and Fred, before we move on, are there any other questions? Al, Fred, you want to prompt that? Any more public questions?
Yes. Gail, do you have any questions, or Lisa?
Thanks, Fred. No, I don't actually. You asked my question. So thanks.
All right, well, that's what we had on the agenda. I think it was a good discussion. It's always very interesting. And I think it served our purpose, this discussion, to kind of get things kickstarted again. We got some ideas on scheduling and how that's going to unfold. And we've got some ideas about how to get mapping out there. I really like Paul's description of the process, you know, kind of getting out to people who ask for them, kind of laminated maps, and letting them have at it, and then having Paul's team load that data into the software to use in their mapping process. We can kind of tee that up, I think, at future committee meetings here and kind of make more detailed decisions about the process for public input. But that sounds like a very interesting idea, and one that I think we could certainly pull off here, as well as, you know, in-person workshop or two out in the park or wherever, a neutral site where we kind of get people to learn how to do it and mark up maps and those kind of things. I think we've got a number of, it feels like one of those things where the more varied and different approaches we take, the better odds we are to get really good input. All right, our next item, Fred and Al, on the agenda is to schedule the next meeting. And we can talk about kind of frequency of meetings as we, you know, we're going to get into the holidays here. And then some of these meeting dates that were on Paul's tentative schedule or general schedule are going to come up pretty quick next year. So in planning for some of the stuff we were talking about here, just even kind of logistics of pulling off workshops and getting maps made and out to the public and that sort of thing. I think it makes sense to have some follow-up meetings in the months to come. So I just kind of want to give that context and then ask Al and Fred what you think about a meeting schedule going forward. Again, I'll screen share here just so you have this document in front of you again. This is the schedule with the late release of the census data. And then on the right here is the schedule with the on-time release of the census data. So, you know, we could be into hearings on the first hearing on communities of interest in February at the earliest, late February.
This is Fred. I kind of am thinking maybe having at least one more meeting this calendar year, and then as soon as we cross into January, having a meeting at least every month so we can kind of keep track of this. I don't know, Al?
Action to that.
Say that again, Al. I'm sorry.
I don't know what to think about Fred's idea. I'm waiting for somebody's reaction about that, who's been through this before.
Yeah, Paul, how does that sound? Or Evan, how does that sound?
I think that's fine with us. Yeah, I mean, the census was essentially stopped. Theoretically, it could actually be restarted here till the end of the month, but most people are thinking that's not going to happen. We will probably know something more about the census process after the election. There might be, if there's a change in administration, some announcements as to any kind of new timelines. If we maybe late November or into December, we might learn some of that. I'm completely fine with scheduling something maybe in December where we just kind of readdress this timeline based on any new information that we have. If we are lucky and able to kind of get this thing kicked off in February, then we really would need to have that conversation by December anyway. So I don't have a problem with a mid-December kind of you know, scheduling a little call for all of us to get back on.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's do that.
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right. Next meeting is mid-December. We have a council meeting on the 14th. We can do, and the following week is Christmas week. So maybe the later part of that week of the 14th. How does that look for everybody? Like 16th is a Wednesday, 17th, 18th, maybe either the 16th or the 17th.
Might remind you that that'll be off council by then, so you'll have a new member of the group in council.
But I will still be, but I still plan on being active in this only as,
of course, yeah,
public participation rather than as a council participant.
Yeah. Thanks for noting that.
You're just fine with me.
Yeah. The 16th works fine.
Bob, for your team, 16th, okay?
Yeah, I'll just
note for Fidela and I, it appears we'll be on furlough or cost savings furlough at that time, but I'm available. Fidela, will you be able to make time for that? Are you going to be out?
I might be. I'm there's a possibility I might be, but I won't know for about another week or two. But we actually, only because, well, our furlough actually begins the following week, the week of the 21st.
Oh, does it? Okay.
It does.
I must have an old note on my calendar. Thank you. Okay, perfect. We'll go ahead and lock that in then. We'll figure it out on our end, Fidela.
Sure.
Jenna, does that work okay for you?
Yes, depending on the time, it should work. I have something in the, I have another recurring meeting in the afternoon from about 1:30 to 3:30 or 4.
What time works for everybody? Today we started afternoon. Jenna, it sounds like maybe you've got a conflict in the afternoon.
Yeah, if we could start at 4 p.m., anytime 4 p.m. or later works for me. I have another public meeting that starts at 1:30 and it can sometimes go to 4. So I'd want to make sure that.
4 p.m. on December 16th, good. All right, I see heads nodding. We'll lock it in for 4 p.m. December 16th and plan around that. Anything else, Al, Fred?
No.
Want to take us to adjournment then?
Yeah, we'll adjourn this meeting and thank everybody for attending. It's nice to meet new people here.
Yeah, good to see Paul again and to meet Evan.
Thanks.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks. All right.
Everybody take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.